Mike Rabinovich here, and this is the Modelo's Conversations with Data Warehouse Experts podcast series. Our mission in these podcasts is to speak to the best minds in the data warehouse and BI space, and to get their take on the state of the business and find out what they think the future holds. We are also committed to do it in a way that adds value to tech professionals, while at the same time is clear and compelling for the business managers and executives they collaborate with every day. This podcast is brought to you by 7W Data, your go-to portal for all things data. Subscribe free for the latest news and events at www.data.com. That's www.7wdata.com. Follow on Twitter at 7wdata. In today's episode, it is my pleasure to speak with James Serra, a data platform solution architect and data warehouse evangelist at Microsoft. He's a thought leader and influencer in the space, as well as a prolific blogger at www.jamesserra, that's Serra with two R's, .com. Welcome, James.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for inviting me.
I'd like to begin by asking you to tell us a little bit about your background, where you started out, and the journey that led you to Microsoft.
Sure. Well, I've been in this industry for about 30 years. I won't go back as far as my COBOL days, but I first got involved in SQL Server 1.0 on OS 2 in, I think, 1989. And through the years was a developer in technologies almost all around SQL Server, whether it be Visual Basic or .NET. And over the years was a developer, an architect, DBA for about a dozen years. I ran a fantasy football website for a number of years, so I really learned about being a production DBA when you have tens of thousands of people hitting the database on a Sunday. So all about getting the optimal performance and tuning and disaster recovery and high availability and such. And in addition to working for various companies, I had done a lot of consulting over the years as an independent and sometimes working for Microsoft partners, mainly focused on building data warehouse and BI solutions. And as working through partners, I had interfacing with a number of Microsoft people on certain projects and became friendly with a handful of them. And then one day, about 4 years ago, one of them reached out to me and said, hey, we got this role for a TSP at Microsoft. We think you'd be good at it. You're interested. And I said, what the heck is a TSP? It's interesting working with Microsoft Stack for 20 plus years, but never really understanding what went behind the scenes, how they did things. And when he's talked to me about a technical sales professional, and you essentially educate customers on our products through presentations and architect design sessions and through having them understand the use case of our products and how they all fit together. And I said, well, basically it sounds like I get paid to present. And they said, yeah. And I said, well, that sounds great. Because at the time I was getting a little tired of project management and the daily minutiae that goes with building solutions. I just wanted to have more impact with customers, especially when I would join a project and they would have chosen the wrong technology or tools to use. And you're kind of stuck with that. But it was a big change because I went from building solutions to pre-sales, which is a very different animal. But I love it. Microsoft's a great company, and I've been here 4 years and have had a few roles since I've been here. And now I'm a solution architect, and essentially what I said I still do is I educate people on the various products that we have.
Where have you seen the most significant changes in the data warehouse and BI space over, say, the last 5 years?
Well, 5 years time, it's probably like 40 years in internet time.
Indeed.
So yeah, it's been gigantic changes. Obviously the cloud has been the one that's had the biggest effect on customers' building of solutions and the internet in general, because it now allows a massive amounts of data to be consumed by a company. When you look at the internet opens up the world to all these people hitting your website and collecting statistics that way, to Internet of Things, which has become very big, where I can have a device and it can stream data, whether it's taking a temperature of a room or it's sending feedback from a part in a car or an airplane. And it's just opened up a whole new world of data, and data is become the new oil and new currency, where a companies can get ahead by utilizing this data and getting business insights that they never were able to get before. So it's brought a lot of challenges to the data warehouse industry, but it also opened up a ways of analyzing your data never before, especially when it comes to predictive analytics. And now we can not only look at data to see where we've been, but we can use it to predict where we're going.
In the course of your day-to-day projects and education that you do, what are the key pain points that you notice businesses are experiencing when it comes to data warehousing and ETL specifically?
Sure. There's a number of pain points, and it goes to when I was building, or DBA and building data warehouses on-prem, you always had issues with running out of disk space, not having the performance. You have a maintenance window at night where you're loading data and kicking people off, and you were bumping into overrunning that and locking out users. And if you looked at, hey, I want to incorporate all this additional data, you would get pushback from IT. Look, we just don't have the resources to handle that data. So the users were kind of locked in what they can do with the data. And so the pain point was not being able to enhance what you have on-prem, which is what the cloud has changed greatly. But the pain point was just doing what we've always been doing and not getting ahead of our competitors because we can't handle this extra data. So the challenge is not only the extra data too, but the type of data and the velocity of the data. So if it's coming in streaming, how do we handle that? How do we handle data that's not non-relational? It's a semi-structured, and we can get value to that, but we just can't incorporate it into our current system. And you'll see a lot of use cases where the end user will come up of how they want to do some of this reporting or dashboarding, but IT is unable to give them what they want. And so we constantly talk with customers, especially end users, are frustrated because their system won't support what they'd like to do with it.
One of the lines that I've heard speaking to many people in the course of these podcasts over the last few months is that there's some pundits out there that are heralding the death of the data warehouse. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of articles on that, and in fact have started to write a blog on responding to that. And what I talk about is the fact, I think the question is not being asked correctly. It's not whether the data warehouse is dead, but it should be clarified to say, is the traditional data warehouse dead? Meaning you always need a data warehouse more than ever. You need to integrate many sources of data. You need to reduce stress on production systems. You need data governance on there, historical analysts, silos, single version of truth. There's just so many reasons to have a data warehouse in there. But the question really is, if I look at the relational model, when we're using SQL Server and Oracle, do I still need to use that, or can I put everything into a data lake and just get everything I need, and sort of think of it as sort of building a data warehouse within a data lake or Hadoop technologies in there.
Right.
And I have to say it's a big no. The problem with data lake when it first came out was people thought it was this land of unicorns and fairies. You just throw all this data in there and it's going to come out magically. But it turns out all the work you need to do with a traditional data warehouse needs to be done with a data lake, maybe even more so. You still need all that data governance into it. And if you look at, can I use a data lake to generate reporting and insights from my data? You have to understand the data lake, it's a Hadoop technology in most cases. It's just a glorified file folder. And I can't just create folders and put data in there, CSV files, pipe limited files, JSON files, XML files, and go to an end user and say, hey, all your data is there, go ahead and make sense of it. Because you'll hear the concept schema on read, which is great, meaning I can dump the data in there, but as it is in its natural native format, but I got to do a schema on when I read it. Somebody's got to do that. So somebody's got to know to take this data and how to join it and how to clean it and how to master it and how to make sense of it all. And most end users have no concept of how to do that. So somebody's got to do the work. Now, yes, you can get data scientists and power users to use the data in the data lake right away. Maybe they're going to run a report for one time. Maybe they're not sure if the data is useful and they want to go and check it out. But the next point is, well, if they do find value in it, somebody's got to do the work to put it in the format that end users can use. And if you look at self-service BI, that is really, I just want to open up a report and click and drag fields on a form and have the report generated. And to do that, you need to have the data in a way that's real easy for the users to have access to it. And generally that means taking it from a data lake, putting in a relational data model, and then cleaning it and mastering it and joining all the tables, and maybe going a step further and creating a cube where you have a star schema. And so it's real easy for an user to attach, a Power BI report right to that cube and start generating results from it. So in the end, what you wind up having is both a data lake that's a Hadoop technology in combination with the relational database store. And it opens up the ability for anybody to have access to it. So if you have that data scientist who wants the data quickly, you put it in Hadoop and say, there it goes. And the end user says it's going to take a little more work, but we'll get it to you in that relational model and you can consume it that way. So it adds more complexity to building these solutions and it takes more time. But in the end, you've now got a system that can be handled, that can handle anything coming in, because it can be designed to handle no matter what type of data it is or how often it's coming in or what the size of it is. And you can consume all that, especially when you're in the cloud, and then those different level of end users can have access to the data in a timely manner.
Speaking of complexity and the time it takes to get these things done, given the velocity and the flows that we have today, what's your take on the role automation can play in making the design and build of data warehouses faster and more cost effective?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of shortcuts. So I try to understand all the various technologies and tools and third-party products out there that can help a customer. And so if there's a tool that I feel would shortcut their process to building a data warehouse, I'm all for it. And I've seen some really good automation tools in there that can help them go from step A to B much quicker and take away some of the manual drudgery that goes along with creating models. And therefore, the cycle to have return of the ROI becomes much shorter when you have some of these tools available for you. Now, there's always some caution. You have to look at the tool and what does it support? Does it keep up with the latest versions of SQL Server and Visual Studio and all the other products that are non-Microsoft on there? And then does it lock you into anything? Meaning, do I have to use this tool or does it really just create code that I can run in there? Because what can happen then is if you're locked in a tool, which could be okay, but then the tool may not do all the features of the underlying product, as well as you now have to hire somebody who knows that tool or needs to get up to speed on it, which could cause some delays in there. But there are plenty of tools that I recommend to create the code, that can build frameworks. So the end user, the IT department is coming out with a solution much quicker. And that's all so important nowadays, because you can't just go back and tell the end users, the business users, oh, I'll have the solution in a year. You want something quick. And we have this agile methodology that maybe comes out with some form of solution right away. But to get there, you generally need to have sharp people and sharp tools.
Right. In our projects at the Modulo, we often find that the technical teams are quite knowledgeable. It's on the business side that we often find a knowledge gap. Now, due to the fact that the business suite has really catch up and fill that knowledge gap, what are the kind of resources that you would recommend to help them on that BI journey?
Sure. And in my role, I work with a lot of large companies, and in some cases, I'll hit the smaller to mid-sized companies. And we'll talk with IT and the business users. And while I'll find that the technical IT folks could be sharp, the biggest challenge is for us at Microsoft is product awareness. They just don't know what we have. And so we need to educate them, especially on the solutions we have in the cloud, so they're using the appropriate tool to build the solution. Otherwise, they just say, well, I'll use this one tool for everything. And it may be a great product, but only for a specific use case. And they come back to us and say, oh, this product's terrible. Well, the product's not bad. You're just using it for the wrong tool. And so you want to educate them. So it's if they're trying to, say, build a car and they go into a garage shop and there's five tools, it's going to take forever to build it. But if there's hundreds of tools and they can choose the best one, it's going to make building that car a lot quicker. And so that's what I spend as a solution architect. A lot of my time is educating them. And now when it comes to the end users, generally they're not technically inclined and they really don't need to be, but what they need to have an understanding is what they can do with the technology. So it becomes use cases. And so what I like to do when I talk to the end users is talk about solutions, talk about ways they can use the data they never thought of. We have a lot of things on the Microsoft site, and you can find other sites on use cases by industry. And it could be predictive maintenance, where we can talk about how they can predict when a car part's going to break before it actually does. We can talk about how they can get more info out of deciding the best routes as a driver to go about, or how to best store packages in their trucks to cut out a few seconds of loading time in there, or predict when they're going to have more packages one day than others so they can ramp up the number of people that they need for that day, or not have people come in if they don't need that many people. You can tell I work for a particular company I may be working for, helping out. And what you find is volume is if they can cut off just a couple minutes for each driver, that results
huge.
In millions of dollars of savings. They even have a thing that was in the news where they want to take more right turns than left-hand turns because it saves on gas on time. And so they optimize that way. So this is where machine learning comes into play. And if you go to end users and you ask them what they want, they're just going to reiterate what they already have because they don't know the art of the possible. Right. So I try to educate them on these predictive model use cases that they can do, as well as something just like Power BI or Tableau that they've never seen reports that can be done this way, where they can slice and dice and they look at it and go, oh my gosh, I never knew this was possible. And all these light bulbs, you can see it, their eyes start lighting up and they think of all new ways they can use the data. And so then that's where they see the value, and then they go to IT and they have to work with them to build a solution. But we'll demo Power BI and machine learning, and it really sets off those light bulbs. And interestingly enough, the most time we get, I see a lot of feedback from customers coming to us and asking us to help them, is when one of their competitors comes out and with something on a newswire and something they're doing that's unique with data that they never heard of before. And then they call us and say, we want to do something similar, because the light bulbs go off and they realize the competition is going to get ahead of them if they don't make better use of the data that they have.
No, we see that a fair bit, exactly what you're describing, James, in the sense that sometimes when you show a prospect some kind of reports they've never seen before, it's as if they've been like looking north their entire career, and all of a sudden they realize there's three other directions and they go like, oh my God, I didn't know it was available. And listen, it's a great feeling when you're able to deliver that kind of value.
Yeah, it's really awesome when you see those light bulbs, and then all of a sudden they have this internal discussion where they're going, hey, we can use it this way and this way and this way, and can we incorporate weather data, and can we incorporate competitor data, and they realize, because especially with the cloud, you remove some of the limitations you have on-prem, that everything is possible now, and so they don't have to hear no anymore from IT on whether they can do things before, so that really opens the door.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fundamental change, turning IT from the department of no to the department of yes, we can. It really is. I mean, you're so right.
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting it right on the head, Mike. And then what you see is if they go to IT and they say no, what happens is sometimes the end users say, well, okay, we're going to build it on our own. So now they have these data silos and they're all independent from what IT is doing. IT doesn't even know they have them out there. And you start having a mess because you have different versions of the truth, and you have different tools and products that they start using, and it becomes a jumbled mess. And if you're trying to build the enterprise data warehouse and you have all these data warehouses all over the place, it really makes it difficult.
Now I want to get to the part of the podcast where we have some non-tech fun and where we get to know our guests a little bit better. So my first question, if you're ready, James, is what is your current go-to TV shows that you're watching or binging on?
Well, and don't spoil it for me if you've seen it, but last night the season finale of Mr. Robot was on. So it's his third season. It's an awesome show.
Yes, it is.
It kind of mixes technology, and it's fairly accurate in what they do. I love it, and I've told my son, who's 21, and you got to watch this, and he's into tech, and he loves it. So that's the big one that's currently on. And, of course, Game of Thrones, which is on a break.
Yes.
It's an awesome show. Westworld was one of the best seasons I've ever seen. Another sort of technology show, but turns a different light on what robots can do, and if you think of them in a different way. And the other show that it's going to premiere, I think, in a couple of weeks, next season, is Black Mirror. It's sort of a Twilight Zone meets technology show. And you think of how great it is to have certain technology. Like, wouldn't it be great if we had little cameras on our eyes and we can see everything? And then they flip it on its head and said, well, yeah, but think of the bad ways it could be used, or how we can, even we're doing a little now where you go and you rate your driver for Uber. What happens if we can rate people all the time? Wouldn't that be great? And then they show the flip side of it.
Right.
It's a really awesome show with some futuristic looks at technology that you just never thought of.
And that's Black Mirror?
Yeah, it's called Black Mirror.
Okay, I will have to check that out. By the way, as a tech guy, I have to ask you, have you seen Halt and Catch Fire?
No, but now I think I'm going to have to.
Oh, you're definitely going to have to. It's about the early days of computers, starting with a small company in Texas that, when you look into it, it's really supposed to be Compaq. And it's only 4 seasons. This is the final season. I can't believe they're not renewing it. But it takes them from basically one of the first laptop computers all the way to the early days of the net in Silicon Valley. Awesome dialogue. I think you're going to love it. I'd love to see. Like, email me and let me know what you think once you check it out. It's on AMC.
Well, I may be cursing at you because I can download it and I'll be up all night watching.
I'm glad you said that, because I tell this to everybody. Please don't hold me responsible if you're binging on it for the holidays. It's not my fault.
If you hurt your relationship with your spouse and your kids, it's not your fault.
Right, exactly. That's my disclaimer. My next question, what is the best non-tech book you've read in the past few months that you would recommend or gift to your friends?
Yeah, well, it's actually a book that I reread every few years. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And it has a bunch of it helps you understand human nature when it gets to making people like you, how to make them win people the way your way of thinking, how to be a leader. And when I read the book, I thought I had this insight into human nature, and it helped me be successful in my career. And only I knew it. And I read the book and I was like, oh no, this everything I thought I knew about is actually in this book.
Right.
And the book came out in 1936. So
right.
These ideas have been around forever. And a lot of them are common sense that people just don't understand. And when you read the book and you understand about human nature and how people react and how to get them to agree with you, or how to win arguments, or how to get just people to like you overall, I found using these technologies even before the book came out that I was doing on my own really was beneficial in relationships, whether it be work or friends and such in there. So I always go back and reread it, and then I have given it to my kids and other people I know, and everybody loves that book.
It's a classic Dale Carnegie. I'm a big fan as well, and I was just going to say what you just said, that my oldest read it when he was probably 21 like yours, and he read it probably when he was 17, 18. Life changer.
Yeah, yeah, and it's both three of my kids, I gave the book when they were all around their 21 years old, and they all said the same thing. Wow, this is, and you know how hard it is to tell kids.
I hear you. And what I've done since they were younger, and this was not me, I learned it from a great motivational speaker, Charlie Tremendous Jones. He used to pay his kids to read books, and I said, like, oh my God, You know, so at the time they're like, you know, 12, 13, 14, 10 bucks was a lot of money for them. 20 bucks was a lot of money for them. Mm. So I'd get them to read these great books. And I said, like, what a cheap investment in great education. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a great idea. See, now the podcast is also how to raise your children.
Right. I should add that to the tagline. My last question for you in this vein is, with the holidays upon us and everyone looking for gift ideas, what is the best purchase you made under $100 in the past year?
I can think of a couple of things. One of them that I've given all my kids that they love was just a charger for your phone, one of those portable chargers.
Yes.
Because I'm amazed at this day and age that these batteries don't even last a year. Sometimes I'll go half a day. And they have these small little chargers that can do a great job at getting your phone back up to speed real quick, because boy, you can't go without a dead phone for more than 10 minutes nowadays, especially when I'm in New York in the subways and you got nothing else to do. So you pop out your phone and you get those for 20, 30 bucks from the really good ones. And then the other one I got, I'm a big Seinfeld fan, and there's a Seinfeld trivia that was, and then I've gotten a lot of fun of that. And they actually have Seinfeld trivia contests here in New York City where I'm at.
I can see that.
And so it's, and because it was here too. And they actually have the Kramer Reality Tour is actually a tour that I've taken here that still goes on from the real Kramer. And he knows more not than anybody, but the trivia, because everybody that I know has watched Seinfeld, and they have different levels of questions asked. They have some basic ones and such. So we found that it's a great way when you have people over who know a little bit about Seinfeld to enjoy the evening.
We definitely cannot go down that road because we'll be here till tomorrow. So, but that's a great call. Last but not least, James, where can our listeners find out more about you on the web?
Sure. My website is jamesserra.com, S-E-R-R-A. And I try to blog at least every week. I've been blogging for, I think, 5 or 6 years now. And we find a lot of customers and even internal micro people keep up with technology through the blog, because I try to make things simple. This technology can be very confusing. So at a lot of high level, I try to help people understand what this new product or feature is, what's its use case. And so they can, and then they can just follow one blog and keep up with mostly everything Microsoft related that's coming out as a way to stay ahead of the curve in there. And then I have a link underneath there about presentations, and I upload all my decks that are free to people use that will go into more detail about some of the products that we have, or some concepts about the data lake and the data warehousing. Yeah. I have a lot of presentations on that. And then generally, people don't realize a lot of us at Microsoft Solution Architects, we're a free resource. And so you can contact me, and we're happy to answer any questions you have about technology, because we look at it as, well, you can probably spend 8 hours and try to figure out what this product is, or you can call me,
easily,
or email me, or read my blog, and you can figure it out in just a few minutes.
That's really valuable to know. And awesome. Obviously you're on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah. I get about a dozen requests a day through LinkedIn, and I'm happy to accept. And then on LinkedIn, I have a list of all my presentations, and you can follow my activity. I'll post when I have a blog out there, so you can be notified when there's something new that you can read.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time today, James. Much appreciated.
Yeah, this is great. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you, and thanks for listening, everybody. Till next time.